Okay, all right, so check out this interview. I recently saw a play at the Atwater Village Theater that I was completely unprepared for. It was one of the few times that I didn't like sort of look up and see, you know, what is this about? And the play is called Blueberry Toast. I got in there and I sat down, and as soon as the play began, I was just knocked back in my seat, and I really enjoyed being there. I was very disturbed, but I really, really enjoyed being there. And joining us today to talk about this play is the playwright, Mary Laws. Mary, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Why don't you tell people about this thing that disturbed me so seriously? I mean, it was really funny, but go ahead.
Sure. So the play is called Blueberry Toast. It's a really quick play. It all takes place over about an hour and 10 minutes, I think. The premise is very basic. A woman wants her husband to eat this breakfast that she's made him, which is blueberry toast, which is something that she's created, and he won't do it, and chaos ensues. It sounds very basic, but it's very dark, and it's a comedy, and their two children, Jack and Jill, are running in and out of the play. They've been creating their own play this morning, and so they're performing it for their parents. Yeah, I don't know.
It's funny, but even as you're laughing, you're going, what am I laughing at?
Right.
It's disturbing. Where did this come from?
Everyone asks that. I think sometimes people worry about me, too, once they see the play. There's this really lovely woman she's a therapist who, like, came to see the play a couple of weeks ago and afterwards said, are you all right? Is everything okay? I wrote the play when I was in grad school, and I wrote it really, really quickly. I wrote it in just a couple of days. And I think partially I had been reading Ovid's Metamorphosis. And so I think partially I was influenced by that, because I think, you know, it was really fascinating the way that Ovid uses the power of transformation in his work. But more than that, probably it was where I grew up. I grew up in a town called The Woodlands, Texas, which is a master planned community. Have you ever seen the television show Weeds? It's like Agrestic. It's like that town where like everything is the same, but everything is very new, sort of like a fantastic place to live, a fantastic safe place to live, I think is the way people think about it. But it turns out to be, in my experience, yes, a very safe place to live, but also a place that has the sort of a veneer on it. And I think, like, a lot of people living there thought they were living the American dream, but to me it seemed phony. And so I think probably a lot of the play came from, like, what is it that's stewing underneath us as we are walking around, you know, fabricating this perfect persona as people.
I'll tell you, when I was sitting there, when the husband first comes out and sits down at the table to eat or to read or mark papers or whatever he's doing.
Right.
Okay, then the wife comes out, and you're sort of looking at this and you're thinking, okay. Then the first thing happens, she doesn't cook what he wants her to make for breakfast.
Right.
And then it just spirals out from there.
Right.
And the thing is you're weirdly in a familiar place. The social relations in the society, they're the same everywhere. You know, what it struck me as is that perfect little family and a perfect little house.
Mm-hmm.
And you knew there was something really evil underneath all that, but it never really came across, and you were never able to put your finger on it. But you really dissected things, so it didn't hammer down on things, but it just let it unfold. You couldn't take your eyes off of it, but it was also really repulsive at the same time.
Right, right. I mean, to me, a lot of the play is about what happens when we're not honest with each other, too. That does spiral out of control, because then we don't know how to get back to that sort of, like, baseline honesty when there's just so much misinformation that we're piling on and on and on, and so much of this, like, fabricated perfection. And so even though the play is like deceptive, I think it's deceptively simple. It's really just about people who want to communicate with each other and also like be accepted. You know, it's eat my toast becomes sort of a metaphor, I think, as the play goes on.
Mm-hmm. But there's one thing in there that got me, which was there's something else that's happening. You're actually looking at this couple that by all appearances, at least in the beginning, by the end, you're just like, what the hell? and you laughed a lot, but it was always a very troubled feeling after you were laughing.
Yeah.
There's something in there about the social relations between men and women and the role of the family and the way that this family and the husband ruling the roost and everybody else is secondary to that.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of began to unravel in a very, very, you know, serious way. I mean, even that plea for like, just try it. Just try my damn blueberry toast, you know.
Yeah.
And as each approach with the blueberry toast came up, things began to unravel more and more. And to me, it really captured a lot. When she's talking, I thought this is a very powerful piece of writing in this play, where she's talking about, she's basically saying, what happened?
Mm-hmm.
What happened to us?
Mm-hmm.
You were a poet.
Yeah.
and I wanted to hear all of your words. And I thought of all the things that I wanted to do and I could do, but I've put them all aside.
Right.
And you're looking at that, and as you're laughing at all this stuff that's happening, right, there's also this, at least for me, there was this recognition that there's such deeper social forces and social relationships that are sort of being laid bare, which was really important.
Sure, yeah, I agree with you. I am trying to say a little bit of something about gender roles in the play, because I do think the idea of the male figurehead as patriarch it's becoming a rapidly antiquated idea that this is what a family unit looks like. My brother always says expectations lead to frustrations, which I think it's a really catchy little mantra to say to yourself, because it's true. And I think the man in this play, Walt, the father, I think he had a lot of expectations about what life was supposed to give him because he was the male patriarch. And I think that particular speech that you're talking about, his wife is saying to him, you know, what happened to you? And essentially what did happen was he was disappointed by what life had to offer. It wasn't enough, and it wasn't as much as he thought he was promised or should have been given, based on the fact that he is the male figurehead of this family and he hasn't done anything terribly wrong and he did work hard to provide for his family, and yet he still isn't satisfied. He doesn't want the blueberry toast. He doesn't want what life has put in front of him. He wants something else. In the play, he keeps talking about, I want to get into oil. I'm just going to get into oil and then I'll be happy. And it's like that thing. It's that thing, you know, across the street in the neighbor's front lawn. Like, if I could just have that thing, then I'll be finally happy. But like, you know, that never works.
Write that down. But there is another part of this too, though, because I found the two characters and those kids. I got to tell you, those were kids from hell. Okay. They were real. Yeah, I thought they were really funny, but yeah, it was so damn disturbing. It was sort of like a demented Greek chorus that was going on with those kids.
Mm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And you can explain that in a minute. But just one point around the other thing is that the person that I really identified the most with was the wife, the wife and mother. I agree with what you're saying about his expectation and his failure to meet those expectations. Mm-hmm. And actually, even though that's an antiquated vision of all this stuff, there is the reality that's asserted time and time again. Like, you look at this country, and even though the nuclear family doesn't exist the way it used to,
mm-hmm,
there's a constant reinforcement from the culture itself, but also from the people who are sitting on top of everything.
Mm-hmm.
There's really a lot of that that just comes out. This is what you're supposed to be looking for. And I felt the woman at the time, she's going through all this, and she is demonically, like, sort of constantly bringing back the blueberry toast. But there's a plea in her voice at one point where mm-hmm she says, why couldn't you just eat the toast? Mm-hmm. That's all I wanted you to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was like saying, just recognize me as a living, breathing human being with mm-hmm feelings and doing something, and you can't even eat this damn toast.
Right, yeah. She's not asking for much, right?
Yeah. But see, there's so much concentrated in that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree with you. It feels like, I mean, I think Barb's struggle is that she isn't asking for much. Like, she's just asking for a gesture. It's a gesture, you know, and it's very, very, it's very small, but there's so much weight in the smallness of it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's, yes, she's asking for something like within the framework of her relationship and in her marriage and her family, but I think just also as a woman too,
yeah,
you know? And I mean, I'm a woman. Surprise. But I find that there are times when, as a woman, I bump up against, or I find myself in situations where I don't feel like I'm asking for that much, but, you know, my pleas are not met the mm-hmm way that I wish that they would. And, you know, it happens in social situations. It happens in, you know, within the framework of, like, my career. I mean, I'm a woman writer, and I write in, you know, in television, which are really like male predominated writers' mm-hmm rooms. And so it is my internal cry sometimes, which is just, I'm not asking for as much as you probably think I'm asking for. I'm asking for equality and recognition. And anyway, I think that's Barb too.
Let me remind listeners that you're tuned into the Michael Slate Show, and we're talking today with Mary Laws, who is the playwright of a great play that I really recommend everybody see, because it's going to knock you back in your seat. It's going to disturb you. It's going to make you laugh like hell. The play is called Blueberry Toast, and it's playing at Atwater Village Theater. I mean, one thing, look, you know, even this thing about, I don't know, there's a thing here where the simplicity of the woman's request around, or the demand, it actually grew into a demand. And she, because she was examining herself too, she was like, what the hell have I given up? What have I let loose? Where is the me that came into this relationship?
Mm.
And there's a realization that all this stuff comes out is just unfolded or crumbled.
Mm.
And then you have the kids coming in. Now let's talk about that pair.
Sure.
What were you thinking when you created those kids?
Well, first of all, aren't they great actors?
Yeah, they are.
I think they're
they
so
are
fantastic.
Tremendous, yeah.
Oh, they're wonderful. Well, this was my family dynamic growing up. And now, don't get me wrong, this family is not in any way mirroring
Let me
modeling
move further
my
away.
Family. No. I grew up in a very happy home. But, you know, it's a sort of traditional American family mm-hmm. dynamic, you know, husband, wife, and little boy, and the youngest daughter. And I remember, I mean, I, as a kid, loved to perform for my parents. That was like a huge part of my childhood and my journey to becoming an artist. And so they were my first audience, and they were probably my best audience too. I mean, they loved everything I did. But I would do little plays for them, and so I knew I wanted the kids to be a part of this world, and so it just sort of, you know, it was natural that they started coming in and out, and they're writing a play. But I think the thing you have to look at with the kids is Jack in particular. In a lot of ways, I feel like this is Jack's play. I go back and forth between whose play I think it is, and I don't think there actually has to be, you know, I don't believe in, like, there has to be one protagonist, and I think some people do, probably a lot of people in Hollywood, but I think Jack is, you know, he's the oldest child, and there's something, like, a little different about him. There's something about him that he's got, like, wider eyes, you know, he sees a little bit more of the world. He sees the world more clearly, I think. And he's also, as opposed to Jill, who is the youngest daughter, I don't think she's yet had her, like, awakening, I would call it. I don't think she's seen with adult eyes yet. I think she still has really naive eyes. And you can tell, like, as things are happening in the play, she doesn't know what they are. You know, for instance, like, there's one part where the parents start having sex, and she doesn't understand that, you know, because she's pre-sexual. But Jack, I think he sees something and he is concerned, and I don't think he's able to articulate himself by, you know, in just basic English, I am concerned about what's happening in this house. So he performs a play. It's his dramatic, artistic interpretation of what's going on. And I think in a way, it's his cry for help. You know, he's saying, look at yourselves, because something terrible is going to happen. And the different acts of the play has four acts, the children's play has four acts, and they get a little bit stranger and a little more, you know, absurd. And it goes a little bit more from, like, an actual kid's play to something that I feel is, it's very pointed. But I think, like I said, in a lot of ways, it's him trying to say, please pay attention to what's happening.
And at the same time, I mean, that's interesting, because I hadn't thought about that. I was kind of trying to figure out these kids, what the hell's going on.
Right.
And it was funny, but it was also very poignant. It was sort of like you're saying, like, you're looking at these kids who are in this world that they don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, there's this other thing. This is part of the thing about suburbia and men and women and the relationships and standard marriages and all this other stuff, is that all that stuff gets passed on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so in a way, there was a way that I felt that Jack in particular was sort of like stepping into the role that of his father.
I think you're absolutely right. I think that's part of it. I think Jack doesn't want to do that too, is the thing. And I think he's fighting against that. And I mean, I don't want to give away too much about what happens at the end, but, like, I think ultimately he fails. And yes, you know, I think there is some element that he's, you know, stepping into this role, and it is. The cycle is, you know, it's perpetuated unless you do something about it, unless you recognize it, and that's what Jack is trying to do. He's like, please, 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 please recognize it, and whether we're able to or unable to, you know.
One more question.
Yeah.
How the hell did you make it as funny as it was? Because I'm telling you, it's really, you know, and people sitting next to me were just like, holding on to the chairs and laughing. I mean, it was just...
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, but it is great. And I'm laughing, but like I said, all the time I'm laughing, I'm like, ah. And, you know, listen, folks, it's... you haven't seen blood until you've seen this play.
So. I always tell people, this wonderful director came in from New York to direct the play. His name is Dustin Wills. Seriously, he's absolutely fantastic. He's also a Texan, like myself, very proud to be from Texas, the Lone Star State. But we did what I call, like, a workshop production of it a couple of years back, and we didn't have much of a budget. I think we had $300 or $500. And we spent almost all of it on blood. So that'll tell you a little something about the play. But Yeah, I mean, he just to speak to Dustin too, he's been very influential in helping me develop this play, and I think he really understood the comedy and the timing, mm-hmm. because it is, there's a style to it, you know, it's highly stylized, and both Dustin and all of the actors, I think they really nailed that.
Yeah, yeah, and it did give rise to a lot of gasps and horror, but at the same time, just really funny. It was like Freddy Krueger was like putting on Happy the Clown suits.
Oh my God, well, that's my dream.
Yeah, there you go, you got it. All right, thank you very much. All right, thank you for coming in.
And
Mary,
so much.
It was just great talking with you and a great experience seeing your play.
Thank you.
And I did
it.
Laugh quite a bit.
Oh, good.
Even
good.
As I was horrified. All right, and the play is Blueberry Toast. It's at Atwater Village Theater, which is 3269 Casitas Avenue in Los Angeles in Atwater. And it's 8 p.m. Fridays and Saturdays and 4 p.m. on Sundays. Mary, thanks very much for joining
us. Thank you.
Okay. All right, welcome back. That was an interview I did with Mary Laws, the playwright for the play Blueberry Toast. All right, and it's also, I should tell people, the play is extended through October 29th, so you have a chance, many chances, to go and see it. And